Welcome everyone to today's Fireside Chat.
This is number 372 for CH Networks. We're a project here at the University of Ottawa. Today's date is March the 4th, 2014. We're happy to work with Healthy Canada by Design, CLASP, and the Canadian Partnership Against Cancer and Heart and Stroke Foundation. Our topic today is incubating healthy communities in rural and remote communities. Healthy Canada by Design in Newfoundland, New Brunswick, and Saskatchewan. And we're fortunate to have a number of excellent advisors on tap. Kevin Gould from New Brunswick Department of Health. Holly Owens, also from New Brunswick. Mary Bishop, who is also is in Newfoundland. Janet Faye Matthews in Newfoundland, Megan Jones, who is out in Saskatchewan with the Regina-Capel Health Region, Joyce Lucer, who is also in Saskatchewan, Regina-Capel Health Region, and our resource person for today is Mayor Lloyd William from the town of Grenfell, Saskatchewan. Slide number 4, and I'd like to introduce my colleague at Healthy Canada by Design, Kim Parada.
I'm Kim Parada, and I work for the Heart and Stroke Foundation, and I am one of two people who run the Healthy Canada by Design CLASP initiative, and we are an initiative of many organizations across the country. We have 5 national organizations, including the Canadian Institute of Planners and the Canadian Institute of Transportation Engineers. We also have 11 health authorities from 7 different provinces who work with us, and we also work with several academic institutions and a few non-governmental organizations. And we are funded by the Canadian Partnership Against Cancer, which is an agency of Health Canada. Next slide.
Slide 5.
So in terms of Healthy Canada by Design, we're on year 3.5, year 4. Our funding ends in September of this year. But the vision of Healthy Canada by Design has been to have health officials, planners, and transportation professionals, NGOs from across the country, working together and collaboratively to try to ensure that our built environments, our communities, are designed to promote and support health and well-being. And with a particular focus this year on active transportation and a particular focus on reducing or increasing physical activity and reducing risk factors that contribute to chronic disease. Next page. Page 6. So I have the pleasure of introducing 6 speakers from 3 of our project teams. The first 2 speakers from New Brunswick are Holly Owens and Kevin Gould. Holly Owens is an associate and professional planner with Dillon Consulting in St. John. She has more than 8 years of land use planning experience with a focus on municipal policy development, sustainable community planning, and public consultation. She is currently the Healthy Canada by Design CLASP facilitator working with the New Brunswick project team. Kevin Gould is a professional engineer who graduated from the University of New Brunswick with a degree in civil engineering. He is the public health engineer with the Office of the Chief Medical Officer of Health within the New Brunswick Department of Health, where he manages environmental health programs, including things such as built environment and health impact assessments. Next page. So from our Regina-Capel Health Region project team, we have Megan Jones, who is a public health and community planner with the Healthy Canada by Design CLASP initiative, working with the region, Regina-Capel Health Region. She has a degree in recreation and health and a master's degree in urban and regional planning. Megan has done recreation planning, and community engagement. Joyce Lucer is the Active Living Coordinator with the Regina-Capel Health Region. She has over 15 years experience working as an exercise therapist and as the Active Living Coordinator. She has a degree in physical activity studies and is also a certified exercise physiologist. Next page. Our Newfoundland team includes Mary Bishop, who is a Senior Project Manager Environmental with CBCCL. Limited. She has worked as an urban planner throughout Newfoundland and Labrador for the past 25 years in both the private and public sectors. In 2004, she received the Canadian Institute of Planners' highest honor and was made a fellow of the Institute in recognition of her contribution to the planning profession in Canada. For the past year, she's been working as the planning facilitator for the Healthy Canada by Design CLASP project in Newfoundland. And she is joined by Janet Faye Matthews, who we all know as Faye, who has extensive experience in public health and health administration. She has worked as a public health nurse in rural Newfoundland and Labrador, and then she moved into management positions with regional health authorities across the province. Faye is currently a public health consultant working with the Healthy Canada by Design class project in Newfoundland. And that is it for me. Thank you. Next page.
Slide number 9.
Okay, well, thanks, everybody, and thank you, Kim, very much for the introduction. And I have to say, it's very nice to hear your voice again. And so we're happy today to have the opportunity to speak so that we can share some of the work we have been doing on the New Brunswick CLASP initiative with respect to the health and the built environment, and also share some of our experiences as it relate to the rural and local context. So as Kim mentioned, I'm the public health engineer with OCMHO, which is the Office of the Chief Medical Officer of Health, which I'll shorten to OCMHO. And I've been fortunate to be given the opportunity to begin doing some upstream work on health prevention. With increasing awareness of public health issues, there are growing expectations and demands for public health staff to promote, protect, and improve the health of people in New Brunswick, and that really is what our mandate is. In New Brunswick, and as is probably similar in most other jurisdictions, over 95% of healthcare dollars, representing nearly half of the total provincial budget, goes to the delivery of healthcare to individuals, usually after they become sick. Given shrinking budgets and increased demands, it is important to plan so that we can continue our current work, yet be proactive in moving forward to meet evolving needs. I mention this because it clearly demonstrates that the public health community needs, we really need to show leadership and advocate for increased emphasis on upstream population-based approaches. This thought is mirrored in the strategic plan for the Office of the Chief, and is emphasized by a notion in the document that states that we need to begin to move away from the enjoyable and rewarding work of working with patients to developing partnerships and relationships with organizations and communities. We need to be spending more time in sharing our knowledge, expertise, and experience with those who play important roles in creating healthy people, such as those that play a role in the design and creation of our built environments. We hope to be able to influence a shift in how we as a province think about health and what it means to be healthy. So in May 2012, when Dr. Kristen Muick, who was the MOH responsible for provincial programs in New Brunswick, made us in the Healthy Environments branch aware that the Healthy Canada by Design CLASP project was looking at renewing funding for a second round of projects, and that the second round was to focus on smaller, more rural jurisdictions who would be interested in identifying strategic policy or decision-making opportunities around the built environment and physical activity, we were incredibly excited and interested. It was a tremendous opportunity to build internal capacity and engage and collaborate with relevant local built environment stakeholders. So next slide, please. We should be on slide 10 now. So this is just a quick outline of the presentation. We're going to give the objectives of the NB CLASP project, which started in April 2013 and ends very shortly this month, an overview of the four New Brunswick CLASP projects, an overview of gains made through work done to date, share barriers identified and lessons learned, and we're going to share some of the benefits of having health work directly with a planner. And then we'll talk about next steps. So next slide, please, slide 11. So the objectives of the CLASP project in New Brunswick were to raise awareness of linkages between the built environment and health outcomes. So this was not only internally within NB Health, which we felt was really important to bring our own awareness up, but also other provincial departments and relevant external stakeholders, so really those people that played a role in the physical built environment and that had decision-making power. So we're talking about municipalities, other planners, engineers, architects, and so on. We also wanted to ensure that NB Health was better able to understand the built environment decision-making framework and processes in New Brunswick. We wanted to begin to establish relationships between NB Health staff and other collaborators to create ongoing opportunities for cross-sectoral discussions, learning, and knowledge exchange with the hopes of developing collaborative processes and decision-making. And finally, we wanted to ensure that a structure or mechanism was in place to continue to move the Healthy Built Environment agenda forward once the CLASP project has been completed. So next slide, please. Project, slide 12.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. So I'm going to just very quickly give you a little taste of the highlights of each of the four projects that we've been working on for the past year. So first of all, with the City of Fredericton, this project was focused on building a relationship between NB Health and the City. And the work included a number of things, such as meetings with various planners at the city to better understand how NB Health could help the city accomplish their goals with respect to a healthy built environment. It included NB Health participation as a key stakeholder in a city urban design planning project, and that included a review of the draft planning document and then subsequent incorporation of NB Health comments into the revised document. And it also includes plans for NB Health to do a healthy built environment overview presentation to City Council, which will hopefully happen this spring. And beyond building a relationship with the city, NB Health sees this project as an opportunity to develop a partnership model that they can use to begin establishing relationships with other municipalities in the province on this topic. The second project is the Provincial Planning Legislation Review. So in New Brunswick, this legislation, the Community Planning Act and the Municipalities Act, are under review by the New Brunswick Department of Environment and Local Government. And these acts are pretty old. They were done in the 70s, and they currently make no mention of community health or even active transportation and have very few tools that allow planners or communities to develop policy or approve development that specifically supports a healthy built environment. So NB Health was invited to participate in the legislative review process. To pull together their written submission, NB Health brought together over 20 public health partner organizations to review the acts and provide input on changes that they would like to see so that communities have more authority and control to create healthy built environments. The NB Health submission was very well received, and as a result, NB Health was invited to present their information to a senior management group at the Department of Environment and Local Government. And the draft framework for the new acts was actually released yesterday, and we've had a chance to do a really quick read through, but it does include reference to the built environment and health outcomes, which is very positive. And now NB Health has the opportunity to review the draft framework and will be providing additional comment. The third project is the RALA tools. So RALA stands for the Rural Active Living Assessment Tools, and these were developed through the University of Southern Maine. These tools were designed to help rural communities assess the physical environment and community infrastructure, programs, and policies that influence levels of physical activity in rural areas. And when they say rural areas, they're specifically referring to populations of about 10,000 people or less. So the RALA tools consist of three separate assessments: community-wide, program and policy, and street segment. And NB Health adapted the tools for the New Brunswick context and then partnered with five rural communities to test pilot the RALA tools. And the purpose of the test pilot was to evaluate the usefulness of the tools to determine whether they should be made available to rural communities across the province. So three out of our five partner communities have completed the tools and are in the process of reporting their findings and providing feedback, the majority of which has been very positive so far. The next step will be for NB Health to review the pilot project results and make a decision about rolling the RALA tools out to rural communities across the province. And then the fourth project was to ensure that there's a structure or mechanism in place so that we continue integrating health considerations into built environment decisions in New Brunswick once the CLASP project is completed. Originally, we thought this might take the form of developing a healthy built environment coalition. However, as we worked through our various projects, it quickly became apparent that this may not be the best approach because of existing coalitions and ongoing work being done by other organizations here in New Brunswick. As part of this project, we were fortunate to be able to have Dr. Karen Lee, a healthy built environment expert from New York City, come up to Fredericton. During her two-day visit, we held a series of events bringing together more than 100 healthy built environment stakeholder organizations, members of the business community, and private citizens to learn about and discuss healthy built environments in New Brunswick. A number of action items were identified through these meetings and have formed the action plan for NB Health to continue advancing healthy built environments in New Brunswick over the long term. Next slide, please, slide 13. I'm going to hand it back to Kevin now so he can talk about how awesome it was to work with a planner.
And it was awesome, I can say. Yeah, so thank you very much, Holly. That was a good overview of our projects. And from the Office of the Chief's perspective, we'd like to give some examples of the real value we found in having a planner as part of our team as we work through these projects. So in general terms, Holly was able to help us understand the complexities of the planning process in New Brunswick, including an overview of the current policies and legislation that are in place, which provided us with great insight into the difficulties, challenges, and barriers the planners, municipalities, and others have and moving forward with healthy land use planning principles. So this is information that, you know, we, you know, really didn't have a good grasp on. So Holly was able to provide examples of positive planning processes that are in place in other jurisdictions, and these insights were extremely helpful when we provided input to DEGL's review of the Community Planning and Municipalities Act, and Holly gave a good overview of that. So we're very happy to see some of the language that we think is important was included in the framework. And so we were able to provide a correspondence to them that was well received by their planners, and that built a solid business case to include a health lens on land use planning. Specifically to the rural context, Holly was able to help us really understand the challenges and lack of planning tools for rural New Brunswick. During the development of our action plan, we really wanted to have a project to focus on these issues, and it was Holly who suggested the RALA tools. So we look forward to continuing to work with rural communities on evaluating those tools with the hopes of being able to roll them out province-wide. Excuse me. Holly's existing relationship with the planning community also gave us an in, if you will. They gave us an in to set up various meetings with other planners. And it was a different dynamic in that it was not us at Health approaching these folks and asking for meetings, but it was more planner to planner suggesting to them that Health could have something to offer and contribute towards helping them achieve their goals. Holly was able to inform of the work we've been doing with CLASP, and by having these meetings with other planning professionals, we at Health now have a better understanding of the planning language that is used, but also intact. And what I mean by that is when it does come time for OCMO to approach other municipalities, for example, we can better understand their needs and their challenges, but also have a better insight of how we at OCMO may be able to support the healthy built environment decision-making processes. So I'm gonna pass it back over to Holly, and she's gonna talk about gains and lessons learned. Next slide, which will be number 14, please.
Great, thanks, Kevin. Okay, so I'm just going to touch on a few of the gains that we've had over the course of the past year. So as a result of our class work, there's an increased understanding and awareness of linkages between the built environment and health outcomes. And this increase has happened not just within ND Health, but within other provincial departments, as well as other local governments, stakeholder organizations, the business community, and the public. In terms of relationships through this work, the folks at ND Health have established a number of new relationships with groups that play a crucial role in healthy built environments. Examples include local government like the City of Fredericton and our RALA tool partner communities, as well as professional organizations such as the Provincial Planning and Landscape Architect Associations. ND Health has also made gains in terms of new policy and tools. Examples include ND Health input into the review of provincial planning legislation and the City of Fredericton Main Street Urban Design Plan. Those policy documents will now include healthy built environment considerations, which they may not have otherwise. Also, adapting the RALA tools for New Brunswick is another example. While the tools are still being evaluated, pilot project communities have already identified specific action items for improving their built environment. For example, using the RALA tools helped Hampton, a town of about 4,000, to notice that they had painted some of their bike lanes on the dark side of the street, the opposite side of the streetlights. It also highlighted the importance of a project the town is working on to develop a walking school bus program connecting a school bus stop with a soon-to-open portion of the Trans-Canada Trail and the local elementary school. I can go to the next slide, please, slide 15. So I just wanted to also briefly touch on some of the barriers we encountered and lessons learned. So limited staff time and resources. In the experience that we had, the availability of staff time and resources was a challenge, and this is particularly true in rural communities where you may have one staff person who's wearing many hats. So we ran into this in our RALA Tools pilot project in a couple of cases, one where one of our partners was unable to complete the tools due to a lack of staff time, and we also had another partner community where the only planner who was also the only staff person took a job elsewhere, and that position still remains vacant, so that was a challenge for us. Be ready to adapt. So this is one of our lessons. So we learned we had to be flexible with our original plans and be ready to adapt. So rather than approaching our partners with the attitude of, this is what we'd like you to do, we learned pretty quickly it's much more effective to approach with what can we do to help you achieve your goals with respect to a healthy built environment. And using this approach, we came to better understand the needs of our partners and were able to adjust our role accordingly. We also learned about the value of collaboration in a number of contexts. So, collaboration between public health and planning, which Kevin has already mentioned, but also collaboration between other various built environment sectors. Not just public health and planners, but also engineers, landscape architects, the business community, and other levels of government. Through our RALA Tools experience, we also found that collaboration is particularly important in rural communities where time and resources can be limited. This can mean different departments partnering together, different organizations, or even different communities. For example, the town of Hampton is a rural hub, and they chose to partner to use the RALA Tools with their surrounding rural communities, taking a more of a regional look at their facilities and programs for active living. We also learned the importance of being able to articulate the business case or the co-benefits of a healthy built environment. So, for example, more biking or walking means better air quality, but also more physical activity, which reduces obesity, diabetes, heart disease, etc. Another example is more compact, walkable development patterns save money on avoided infrastructure costs and has positive health benefits. So this is an important tool, and you need to be able to tell the right story depending on who your target audience is. We found this approach helpful when trying to engage those provincial departments, such as education or transportation, who don't necessarily see themselves as playing a role in building healthy communities. I'm going to hand it back over to Kevin. Next slide, please, slide 16.
Okay, thank you, Holly. So as was mentioned earlier, one of our objectives was to ensure that OCMO can continue to push forward the agenda of healthy built environments in New Brunswick after the CLASS project is complete. So coming off the very successful two-day meeting with Dr. Karen Lee that Holly mentioned earlier, we are quite frankly still trying to figure out our next steps. We feel that there was a very good energy in all the forums and a real appetite to continue this discussion, so we certainly don't want to lose any momentum. But as Holly mentioned, what we've learned through this process is that we had to adapt. So our original intent was to establish a healthy built environment coalition, but we've learned that there's already coalitions in place. There's already, you know, those people that we wanted to engage are already engaged at different forums. So what we're doing now is we're moving forward with setting up a number of follow-up meetings, determine if there is a way we can add the topic of the healthy built environment into some of these already established processes, some of these established networks or established coalitions. But on the other hand, we've also been approached by others who have expressed an interest in taking more of a leadership role province-wide on a healthy built environment. So we're going to continue to have these discussions and go from there. So really, we are open to a variety of options and will continue to meet, as I mentioned, to discuss the best approach for next steps. And as mentioned at the start of the webinar, we know that we need to think about ways we can begin to influence a culture shift in how health is thought of and what it means to be healthy. So I would say whatever our next step or steps are, it will at least include this in its perspective. And I think that's it for us.
We've got your coordinates there, so if people have follow-up questions, they can get in touch with you. Slide number 18, I just wanted to welcome you to the webinar. A special shout out to our Saskatchewan listeners who are enjoying today's balmy weather of a snowstorm, minus 18 with wind chills of minus 26, which is warm compared to our past weekend temperatures of minus 50 to minus 60, which was felt all across the province. So let's look at the province of Saskatchewan. So slide 19, please. As you can see, Saskatchewan is made up of 13 health regions, with the Regina-Capel Health Region as the one circled. Our boundaries include those of many other health regions and the Manitoba border. We stretch out over around 2,600 kilometers, and 76% of our population resides in the city of Regina or our urban center. And if you look on your map, I'm just going to circle kind of where Regina is with my pointer, kind of in this area here. And the other 24% is our rural population, with 16% of that being First Nation reserves.
And the town that we're going to be highlighting today is Grenfell, and I'm just going to kind of circle where that is as well. Our population density varies from about 1,500 people per square kilometer in the city of Regina to 9.2 persons per square kilometer in rural RQHR. And just to give you a comparison, Saskatchewan as a whole averages about 1.6 person per square kilometer. So what is the rural RQHR definition? So our definition is those who live outside of the city of Regina. So it's based on the proximity to an urban center, which is different from definitions in other provinces. Slide 20, please. So let's talk about our CLASP project. So we've listed the four action items, and the first was to foster and build relationships with the city of Regina. And this was very pivotal as at one time before 1994, our Department of Population Public Health was actually housed in the city of Regina. And as we moved out of the city, we went from a very collaborative relationship to a consultative. And with the CLASP funding and the project, we are hoping and on our way back to moving towards that collaborative relationship again. The second action item was education. Educate and be educated. And our first education component was to build capacity internally. Again, what is the built environment and its relationship to health and other departments in with other external groups. We had three major events here. We had a telehealth presentation, we had the Growing Healthy Communities Forum, and we helped with the workshop at the Saskatchewan Planners Annual Conference. And we've done many other presentations and discussions to either community groups or to internal planning departments with the City of Regina. The third action item was understand the built environment from the rural perspective. And I mentioned age-friendly communities because we have been doing some work prior to the CLASP funding. We started out in one community doing an age-friendly survey, and the community really took hold. They moved that into action. However, we as health, we didn't follow up with that community with what we started, and when we asked to come back to the table, they didn't see the need. And so that was a concern for us. Megan's going to talk a little bit more about the RALA tools. And then the last action item was that policy piece, that policy development and implementation. And we were involved in the creation of the City of Regina's official community plan, which was called Design Regina, which was a 2-year plus process where we attended every stakeholder meeting that we could to again be visible but also provide input into the policies in a professional manner, in a health lens manner. And so currently, which we have had a huge success, is that we've been a part and asked to be a part of the review of the development applications coming in. So the secondary concept and site plans that are coming in, we get to put in a health lens. Slide 21, please. And so I'm going to discuss just a little bit further in depth the RALA tools and what we actually did with them. So the first step was Holly had sent out an email to the rest of the class partners about the RALA tools and if anybody had used them. And we displayed an interest not in saying that we've used them, but displayed an interest in actually partaking in the use of the RALA tools. So first of all, we gauged the interest. We had talked to a couple of communities. We had talked with ones that we had past relationships with, and took a gauging of the interest of a few other rural communities as well. We Canadianized the RALA tools with Holly and Kevin, Faye, and Mary. We met as a class group in order to discuss some of the needs and some of the revisions that were required to make it more of a Canadian context. Then we took the tools, and once they were revised, and we took them to some of the communities that we had talked to and gauged the interest. We sent the tools prior to the meetings and gave them an opportunity to review them. We answered any questions that they had, et cetera. So we took a bit of a different approach than New Brunswick and Newfoundland. We decided to really get the depth of those relationships, and we also were flexible and adaptable, because you have to be in order to work with these, with communities. Next slide, please, 22. So just a little bit of a demonstration of what the RALA tools look like at this point. We started off with a RALA information sheet that just kind of gave a brief overview for the community on what was in it, brief description of the RALA tools, the purpose of the tools. The community's role was a big question mark for the community in becoming involved. And contact information for the Regina-Qualpell Health Region staff if they had any further questions. We also provided them with the codebook and scoring, being sure to mention to them, because it is a quite a lengthy document, to say to them that this is an explanation, so generally refer to it only if you have a question about some of the assessment tools. The community assessment tool was originally named the townwide assessment tool, because that doesn't apply to all definitions throughout the nation, changed it to community assessment tool. And that provides an overview of the community demographics and characteristics, the educational and recreational facilities, and it gives a little bit of classifications for cities, towns, villages. Next slide, please, 23. The other three pieces to the RALA tools is a program and policy assessment. This provides an overview of the programs and policies that exist within the community that can foster or inhibit an active living. So for example, we asked Grenfell about a sidewalk clearing policy, and it doesn't currently exist, but they're not sure if it actually impacts the walkability of their community. So they had suggested potentially doing a poll on their website just to see whether or not this does impact their walkability of their community. The segment assessment we kept as an optional assessment piece, just because most of the communities that we're dealing with at this present time or that we've examined and talked to are so small that breaking it into smaller pieces is not really necessary and it becomes redundant. And then the RALA tool assessment, that is to determine if the RALA tools were easy or hard to use, and it provides an opportunity to recommend ways to make the tools easier, how useful they were, and if they will use the information generated. Next slide, please, to 24. So the final three steps of our RALA process up to this point, the fourth step was doing the assessment. We actually had the community members do the assessment. It's key that they do the assessment. But in our case, we also had one of our rural health educators go out and assess with them. So just to work with them on it and have that presence there. The fifth step that we had was we went back out and we had a meeting with the community to review their findings. We wanted to create a vision statement and an action plan. The vision statement that was created is more specific to active living and health promotion within their community. They had just undergone an official community plan process, so we wanted to ensure that this vision statement encapsulated what it means in terms of active living and health promotion. And then we started to fill in the first couple of blanks on the action plan. And follow up after our sixth step was a phone call with the community 2 months of the post-assessment to review some of their quick win actions and some of the long-term goals. Part of the action plan that we put together was that they had quick wins so that you can gain that momentum in order to be able to sustain yourself to get to those long-term goals. So the vision statement that we got from the town of Grenfell is, we, the town of Grenfell, strive to be leaders in supporting a positive, progressive, friendly, safe, healthy, and accessible community for all. And on to page 25. So a little bit of information about the town of Grenfell. The population is 1,049, and that's Stats Canada from 2011, and it's increased from 947 in 2006, again, Stats Canada. The distance from our offices is an hour and 15 minutes, so that just kind of demonstrates a little bit of the commitment that we had to go out and host two meetings. Some of the economic drivers within this community it used to be primarily agricultural, but more recently there has been a shift as well, in keeping with the agricultural, to some home-based businesses and other economic drivers such as resources. the health services that they offer out in this community is they have a hospital 10 minutes away, respite home, private ambulance, medical center, transportation vans, and private care homes. So this, the reason I'm giving you the health services piece is that we have been able to foster more of a positive relationship with the community because of this RALA Tools coming out and investing a little bit of time and energy into them. I'm going to turn it back over to Joy. And next slide, 26, please. Great. So was the strategy we used effective? So was using RALA Tools effective in our rural engagement? And we definitely can say the answer is yes. You know, the town of Grenfell has had a huge success with the RALA Tools. We've been able to build and rebuild our relationships, and they've been able to move forward on their action plan, their action items. So that's what we can say right at this moment. We have yet to see long-term repercussions, but those will continue. However, with the other rural communities that we approached, we did not get the same excitement or support for the RALA Tools, and for various reasons that I will discuss under barriers. So next slide, please, 27. So in terms of meeting our goal or action number 3, understanding the built environment from a rural's perspective, we have a starting point. We have more of an idea of what a healthy built environment looks like in a rural setting. And we will be using the town of Grenfell, our one rural community, to help champion other rural communities. This is just the beginning. So slide 28, please. Why did it work? What were the advantages? And I just wanted to mention that Megan and I are both from small rural communities, and we definitely believe that this helped to demonstrate that we actually understand rural communities, and it helped with that trust, with that relationship building component. In terms of the tools, we had a tool, the RALA tool, that was specific that we used to rural Saskatchewan that has been adapted by Megan and her team. So it wasn't just a generic tool, it was specific to the rural context. Having CLASP partners, again, helping in the creation of the RALA tool, the New Brunswick, Newfoundland, and others across Canada are doing this. So it gave a sense that we weren't the only ones trying this out. Definitely the town of Grenfell, a huge active support of an administration with the elected officials, and this is a growing community. The class facilitator, having someone focused and designated, was very key, as most of us have many projects on the go, and it was ideal to have one person dedicated as the lead for this project. The other advantage was having Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada sit around the table with us during our discussions, because they were able to provide information for funding opportunities for our communities. Slide 29, please. So some of the barriers or challenges in using RALA tools or approaching rural communities was, again, that perception of that acute care versus promotion and prevention. The perception of health, unfortunately, we get lumped into the same huge network of services, of healthcare services, which puts us with bed shortages, hospital closures, so it's physicians leaving. It's kind of like the good, bad, and the really ugly, which our rural Saskatchewan has been experiencing and continues to experience. So some communities are actually reluctant to work with health, and often they don't know about health promotion and that we actually do work on the prevention end. So we're trying to educate and change that. The funding component, a lot of rural communities want funding directly to help or rebuild their community. And so having Nicole from Heart and Stroke attend the meetings with us helped to bridge that gap with resources and funding opportunities. So why did it work in spite of the barriers and challenges? Again, we had that CLASP facilitator keeping things on track and communicating with the community. We also did some education, again, the purpose of the RALA tools and the use of information. The use of information was key because this actually would help the community that we are serving. It wasn't just a national project for national collection of data. And again, our town of Grenfell, our mayor, very open-minded and very progressive, and so that helped significantly in the success of this project. Next slide, and over to Megan. So just going on to why, so what does this all mean? Why did we do it? One of the reasons behind this is that there's more information needed. Rural information is further behind urban healthy development information. Healthy community development looks different in rural Saskatchewan settings than urban practices. So for example, telling them to replace, put in, or clear snow from a sidewalk doesn't necessarily apply if everybody walks down the middle of the road. Some of the other things, the reasons that we did this, is prairie provinces are unique. Proximity to services, other communities, distribution of population and size can be a bit of a barrier, and it can also be an opportunity. And that creates the uniqueness of the communities within our rural areas. So Statistics Canada has even started to define rural and remote communities differently between urban adjacent and remote rural. Some of the other reasons that we did this is some rural communities such as Grenfell are experiencing growth that they haven't experienced since the early to mid-1900s due to a variety of reasons for resource extraction and a strong economy have spurred growth where it really hasn't occurred for quite some time. And we wanted to build that positive relationship. We've been able to facilitate a more positive relationship with Grenfell and show them that RQHR is also health promotion side and the prevention piece as opposed to just acute care. Next slide, please, back to 31. So our plan initially was to select a community. So start with a community that really has a forward-thinking elected officials and administration that is willing to work toward this goal of health promotion and prevention in a healthier community. We wanted to work with that community, not just go out and do the assessment and follow up. Our goal was really a depth of a relationship, not breadth. It's going to be longer term to be able to see some of the results from this, but really creating that depth of that relationship as opposed to just going out and reaching out to a bunch of communities. We also knew that we had a community that was going to be a great champion for us. So moving on to that third piece of using the first community to seek out others, and using that first community as a positive example for interested communities. That way you're also building capacity within others to be able to share information, pertinent information, with each other. And we wanted to build upon that, build upon the momentum and the relationships that have already been forged, building capacity for those communities to share their information and their experiences. So our next steps right now are approaching a few more communities, and we're in discussions with them. Next slide, slide 32. We can keep you posted on that. So the conversation does not end here. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to contact us. But I'm going to turn it back over to Dot.
Slide 33, the contact information if you want to reach any of these folks. Slide number 34, more references and research information. Slide 38, and over to our crew out in Newfoundland and Labrador. Mary, Bishop, and Faye Matthews, over to you.
Okay, thanks, Dot. It's Faye, and I'm going to start on slide 39. It's a nice sunny day here in Newfoundland, but it's cold. It's still winter. And I'm going to start off with a quote by Jose Marti. Like stones rolling downhill, fair ideas reach their objectives despite all obstacles and barriers. It may be possible to speed or hinder them, but impossible to stop them. Jose Marti is actually a Cuban freedom fighter, but his belief was that one can achieve their objective given time. And I think as co-workers on the Newfoundland Class Project, Mary and I have come to a similar conclusion that a healthy built environment will take hold in this province given time. So I'll go on to slide 40.
Okay, thank you, Faye. I just wanted to give a little context for the project here in Newfoundland because it's somewhat different from the way these projects are organized in the other parts of the country. Our project is primarily involved in the eastern portion of the province of Newfoundland and Labrador. And so for anybody that doesn't know where we are as far east as you can get in the country. We have a population in the province here of just over 500,000 people, of which about half of us live here in the eastern region, and about half of that again live here in the urban region that includes the city of St. John's. Our project really began under the auspices of the Provincial Wellness Advisory Council. That was established back in 2002 by the Minister of Health and Community Services. And this council advises the government on issues of public health. And the membership of that council is broadly represented by non-government agencies, professional associations, and government departments. And in 2006, the Wellness Council prepared a provincial wellness plan, and coming out of that were a number of subsequent wellness papers. And they currently are concentrating their efforts on supportive environments, of which the built environment is one piece. Back in 2011, they organized with a number of partners a very successful conference here on health and the built environment. And coming out of that, the organizers of that conference essentially formed the Building Healthy Communities Collaborative. And through the collaborative and the Wellness Council, we were able to obtain funding through Healthy Canada by Design for this CLASP project. So that's really where this has come from. And so our project is not, we don't operate out of or report to a public health authority, even though the health authority has some representation on the collaborative. And Faye and I were hired, as was mentioned earlier, as the facilitators for the project. So next slide, please.
Slide 41.
Okay, back to Faye. I'm going to speak a little bit to our objectives. As part of our initial work, we developed a 13-point action plan to address our objectives, and our objectives were similar to other areas, was to build strategic alliances and capacity. We felt this area required some intensive focus. It was important to identify key stakeholders and develop a common language to assess what groundwork had already been done and to identify where the knowledge gaps existed, to identify and to support roles for health in the planning process and to connect health with municipalities. So we had ambitious actions around that. Our second goal was to facilitate conversations and build networks where we would, which would lead to adoption of built environment policy, which would enable planners, health, communities, and other stakeholders to engage in the implementation of these policies. And the third focus was to promote the use of CLASP tools in planning for the built environment with a focus on rural areas. On to slide 42.
So one of the first action items that we had was to organize a workshop that built on the conference that had taken place in 2011, but really in this case to bring together planners and health professionals to really start talking about how we were going to work together to affect change. And so this workshop included presentations on the links between health and the built environment. It included presentations on the planning process, so to help health professionals understand what we is, what we, I say we because I'm a planner, what we do, and to understand where we could use input from them to support the planning work that we're doing and through that improving the built environment. And I think that was one of the things in that conference that was really useful to the health folks that attended. I think there wasn't a really good understanding of what was involved there. And there were, as other people have mentioned earlier, you know, this level of understanding each other's terminology, some discussions around that. And we'd prepared some background materials to try and put some definitions around different terms that we were using. That workshop included some roundtable discussions where people could talk about maybe some specific things that they could do, and some communities came forward with ideas for things that they wanted to do, and some health people, you know, stood up and said, well, we'll help you do that. So So that networking aspect of that workshop worked out really well. And coming out of it, you know, there was a report prepared, which is available, and people really indicated that they would like to have more opportunities for even further discussion. So that was quite a successful kickoff. And it started that networking that we were meant to be doing. The next thing we did in October was to have a visit by Dr. Karen Lee, and similar to what they had in New Brunswick. And we planned a number of events around her visit to promote awareness of the relationship between health and the built environment. We had a public lecture delivered through Memorial University through a platform that's has a brand that people know and are aware of, so we used those existing sort of structures to facilitate getting her message out. She met with the Wellness Advisory Council and the various regional wellness coalitions that exist. We had a meeting with her and a number of senior officials from the region's municipalities. She appeared on a radio call-in program with Faye on this topic of health in the built environment, and that was, by all reports, you know, very a popular segment that day that it was on. And we also were able to organize a meeting with her and senior policy people within a number of departments of the provincial government. And finally, we had her meet with executives from the St. John's Board of Trade, so the business community. And I have to say that that whole visit really generated additional interest around what we were trying to do with respect to making connections and raising the profile of this topic. Next slide, please. 43.
Okay, back to Faye, and just a little bit about engagement. I mean, engagement was probably was high on our priority list in getting the conversation going, and that focus has really led us down many roads, perhaps not always the road that we thought we would go, but we've had successful engagement opportunities within government, of course with the Department of Health and Community Services, especially through the Provincial Wellness Advisory Council, and our regional wellness coalitions, who weren't difficult to engage. These are volunteers who are funded by government who work with the regional health authorities. They are volunteers, but they work with regional health authorities to promote wellness in their own communities. And the Office of Climate Change, Energy Efficiency, and Emissions Trading came on board and joined the Building Healthy Communities Collaborative after seeing synergies in our respective efforts. And another department is called the Office of Public Engagement, which is a department that has responsibilities for Rural Secretariat, which is another volunteer regional council which advises government on impact of policy in rural areas. And they identified potential community sustainability factors within healthy built environments. And then, of course, we had, as Mary mentioned, the Board of Trade became involved, and Municipalities Newfoundland and Labrador, who represent incorporated towns and communities within the province, became engaged, as well as some other local councils and residents. So we've been having some very active discussions related to healthy built environment. I think another piece has been our ability to transfer knowledge and the learnings that we've had between Newfoundland organizations and the national and international resources that we've gotten through CLASP and expertise has all led to an increased engagement on behalf of stakeholders. And I think there's a start to be a can-do approach here. Next slide, 44.
Back to Mary. So I'm going to touch on just one little example of something that we did, and it touches a bit on what Megan was saying earlier about building on things that already exist and not trying to, you know, bring this in as something new. And I think maybe that's an important lesson for others that might want to start doing these kinds of things. But there's a little beautification contest that is run through the Provincial Federation of Municipalities here. And it's called the Tidy Towns Program. It's a little competition that municipalities enter. And the intention of this little program is to foster civic pride, environmental responsibility, and beautification through community participation. And communities are evaluated by judges that are sent out to them. There's a number of criteria, including environmental and heritage protection efforts, landscaping, parks, open spaces, those kinds of things. And we were able to introduce a number of questions for the judges to ask communities to get them thinking about efforts to address community health and well-being. And we developed and delivered a training package for the judges as well. So we've now introduced this into that program. And that program operates annually, and I think it's been on the go now. This year was its at least its 10th anniversary. So it's an established program, and they're always looking for ways to change and improve. So they were very responsive to what we were suggesting to them. We established what we called the Well-Minded Community Award. So that was to recognize one of the communities and their efforts to promote health through good planning and programming and investment. And last year there were 41 communities that participated in the program. It's a province-wide program, so it's not just here on the eastern portion of the province. And the winner was a small community on the west coast of Newfoundland. And the kinds of things that they were doing that came out through the evaluation, some of these things may not have been things that they had necessarily thought about in terms of their built environment, but certainly it's all part of that thinking around the health of a community. So they have a community health committee, for example, that makes suggestions to the municipal council on ways to improve community health. They had obviously thought about their aging population and were taking steps to regrade one of their walking trails so it would be easier to walk on. They're the community, the town is a member of the Wellness Coalition. They've done things like reducing speed limits within the town to improve safety for pedestrians. They have a community garden. And they also have a little festival every year that is called the Trails, Tales, and Tunes Festival. Which incorporates this kind of active living component. It's a music festival, but there are walks every day during the festival on some of the trails throughout the community. So that was just an example of some of the kinds of things that were going on in that particular community. The award was actually sponsored by the local Heart and Stroke Foundation. So that was a nice little partnership that we were able to bring to the Federation of Municipalities to offer that award. And then a spin-off effect from this little initiative is that the Federation of Municipalities here is interested in organizing its spring symposium around the topic of healthy built environment. And they have also taken this idea of introducing healthy built environment concepts into this little program to the national level, which is the Communities in Bloom program, which I'm sure many of our audience out there today have heard about. Next slide.
Slide 45,
class tools. And this is very much sort of ongoing work. Part of our work has to ensure involvement of rural and urban municipalities in active transportation and to talk about and share the class tools. We've had a fair amount of interest on behalf of communities, one from an urban neighborhood, another from a city planner, in looking at the integration of health impact assessment components into planning documents. And we've also been involved in the RALA tool adaptation. We've shared it with a few communities, but and there is interest, but I think some of the challenges that communities are experiencing right now, they have great enthusiasm, but the capacity to do the work is limited right now. And finally, the work that we're doing in this is being seen by the collaborative is informing a wellness paper, which will be submitted to the Minister of Health and Family Services. And we're hoping actually to move healthy built environment into as a priority. Next slide, 46.
So this slide just is just showing the how that our network of contacts is being built upon through this project. And I see these things are coming in one at a time. But it's just giving an idea of the kinds of organizations that we've been able to reach out to, make contact with, and who have really come on board and are interested in this whole concept. I'm not sure they're not all in there yet, but there they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, they're there.
So you can go to the next slide, 47.
And this is about our barriers, or what we call hitches in time. And, you know, barriers are not different from what other people are experiencing. We're having competing priorities for key stakeholders who support HDE. I mean, they have time resource constraints, and one of the challenges is having to define their role and then shifting resources to support it. A big barrier or challenge for us this year is municipal elections in October 2013, which resulted in a lot of change in municipal councils and a learning curve for new councillors, and often built environment was not their focus at that time. But, you know, this is all understood. And then there were smaller rural areas who would have loved to have taken on some of the RALA tools, but at this point they don't have the resources on the ground. And one example that we found was one community that actually had a wellness grant and probably would have moved along with the RALA tool, but when their community council changed and one of their staff people left, the priority moved way down on the ladder. So they actually returned their wellness grant at this point, but hopefully in the future they'll pick up on that again. And on to next slide. Mary.
Okay, just talk a little bit about the lessons that you know, we've learned, sort of high points. And I think we agree with what Holly had mentioned, that it's important to link sort of positive economic and sustainability outcomes for communities when we talk about this, and when you talk to local communities, and also at the provincial level. And I think that that's very important. How is this going to be useful to you and the objectives that you have? We found certainly that health and planning have many mutual interests, and there's these discussions have been very easy to have, and people get it. And as we've reached out to other groups and organizations, you know, we found that there is a lot of support in the public, and in other organizations to this. And that certainly, when you talk to people about this, discussions around health, it become very personal. So people tend to internalize a lot of these discussions, and so they get it. If they live in a neighborhood where it's not easy to walk, that they can make that that link into what might make it better. So I think there's ways to build upon that. And finally, what we believe is that implementation has to be collaborative to get the result, the best result. And certainly, I think one of the challenges we've had here is having leadership from the health sector. That's been one of our challenges. And we think that, I like to look at these other projects and see how leadership from the health authorities is moving a lot of this stuff forward. And I think that needs to, continue and be at the forefront of a lot of this. So the final slide is our thank you, and we're finished.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I'm on slide number 49. Polly and Kevin, I have a question for you. What were the population of the five Manitoba communities involved in the RALA?
There was a bit of a range. They were all under 5,000, so we had a village of around 950 people, village of 1,100, town of 2,800, town of 3,500 and town of 4,500. So a bit of a spread there. And that I think I mentioned in the presentation that the RAL tools are basically the kind of rule of thumb. They're designed for populations of 10,000 people or less.
About the RALA tools, there are a couple people who are asking, can they access them? If so, how can they get to these?
Well, the original versions of the RALA tools produced through the University of Southern Maine are available online to download. And I think the website is Active Living Research. I don't know it off the top of my head, but Dot, we can send that information to you. And
okay.
Then maybe I'll let Kevin speak to the New Brunswick tools.
Yeah, and from, I guess from our perspective, we're still in the process of evaluating those essentially U.S. tools to see if they're appropriate for the New Brunswick context and formatting. But once we get that process done, I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be able to share them. But I don't really know when that'll be.
In research, most interventions for the built environment focuses on urban settings. And what methods did you use to assess whether or not such interventions would be successful in a local or rural setting?
I would say in the New Brunswick case, the four projects that we ended up working on, there was only one, the RAL Tools pilot project, that was specifically tailored to the rural context in New Brunswick. And that one was a little bit of an easy choice for us, where the RAL Tools were originally developed in 2005, and they've been working on those down in the States, test piloting them in various forms and refining them since 2005. So a lot of work had gone into those tools and making them as applicable as possible for rural communities. So in that case, we kind of just piggybacked along with all that good work that had already been done. And then I think other than that, for us, you know, we had a good team that understands the New Brunswick context, both in public health and in planning. So just that local knowledge is, I think, a filter that we use to help us decide, you know, what kind of approach or tool is going to make sense in our context. In New Brunswick, our urban, you know, is different than urban in Ontario. So even the urban that we have in New Brunswick is not necessarily, you know, the urban tools that work in Ontario, say Montreal or even Vancouver out west, those tools aren't necessarily applicable in our urban areas to begin with. So
Our urban is probably more rural for the Ontario context, right?
Yeah. So hopefully that kind of roundabout answers the question. I don't know if any of the other facilitators wanted to comment.
Yeah, anyone else want to add their 2 cents worth there?
Well, this is Mary here in St. John's. I think, from our perspective, a lot of these use of these tools is one thing. It gets people thinking, maybe looking at ways they could improve their community. But the real proof, the proof of the success is what it comes at the implementation stage, and then what the outcomes of whether the actions that are taken actually improve health within communities. One of the things we've been kind of somewhat frustrated with here is a lack of sort of community level health data, which is problematic in rural, very small communities. So we had done a couple of things, like had a little committee established to look at maybe some the health indicators that would be most important for communities that planners could use to, you know, we could monitor certain health indicators over time. So the planning horizon here is usually a 10-year horizon with a sort of review every 5 years. So you'd be looking at changes in some of these indicators over time. You could match that with, you know, how communities might have invested in changes to their built environment. So say putting in sidewalks or building, you know, walking trails, those kinds of things. But, you know, it's until we actually start implementing a lot of this stuff, it's only then that we're really going to see outcomes, positive health outcomes.
And have some way to measure that as well. Thank you. Question for Megan. I believe you said that you found the RALA segment assessment to be redundant. Can you expand on that? Does that mean you focused on the policy assessment, or what were you referring to? What did you mean by redundant?
So basically what I meant by that, and I'm sorry if it came across that it's not useful, is that we focused on more of the community assessment tool and the program and policy assessments and the action plan. The reason that we didn't really find the segment assessment to be useful in all the smaller communities is that it takes a really tiny piece, maybe half a block, a block, and it examines that at a fine detailed level. And when we were trying to look at the bigger picture, we really wanted to examine the bigger picture and have some actions involved. Now, however, the segment assessment becomes really key if you are going to look at a certain piece and improving that piece of the community. I hope that clarifies some of the questions there. We didn't find that it was useless at all by any means, but we wanted to focus on the program and policy assessment, the community assessment, and the action plan.
Great. There's a bunch of commentary about winter and how that itself is a barrier to being active and outside. People are saying, personally, I stay inside because winter is so cold, and yet the majority of the year, I wish there were more opportunities to be outside during the winter. Earlier in the webinar, it was stated that class was focusing on active transportation methods. Are there any season-specific strategies planned to help people to continue to take part in active transportation during the winter?
Well, this is Mary here in St. John's. This has been probably one of the most frustrating aspects for us of our conversations with organizations, particularly municipalities, when we start talking about active transportation in winter. And when we start talking about clearing snow off of sidewalks and the, you know, public works department people, they at least in this part of the country, they are loath to entertain that idea because of the purported costs of doing that. So that's kind of a difficult conversation for us. I don't know how it's been for others, and probably people out there in the audience have had similar types of conversations that have frustrated those kinds of efforts.
Anyone else want to add to that?
This is Megan from Regina. I'm probably the only one that ran in minus 47 on Sunday, so I do have a little bit to offer personally and professionally. But not only with designing winter areas and spaces, taking a look at cutting down on some of the wind by using coniferous trees along certain perimeters and certain avenues, and using the deciduous trees along the south so that you can allow for sun access during the winter months. And then it cuts down, it also cuts down on the solar access during the summer months when you require that shade. So really using some natural features in order to make the environment more pleasant. One of the big things that we talked about was the West Edmonton Mall is the same size as downtown Regina. But very often in downtown Regina, people will move their car two or three blocks in order to get to a new destination. But that doesn't happen as often in West Ed. But it's climate controlled. There's things to do, there's things to see. So making that, and it feels safer. So making that environment pleasant and aesthetically appealing is kind of a personal choice, but making it pleasant for everybody so the wind isn't cutting through you and that you have that solar access and clearing your sidewalks, just to build upon what Mary and Faye talked about.
This is Faye. Just to build on that, it goes to the policy implications and the decisions that small towns make when they're looking at developers who want to come in and build, and some of the regulations that aren't in place to sort of say, we want you to keep trees. We want to make sure that we have that buffer zone, even though you are developing, and sort of making sure those regulations are in place. Because often what developers do is they come in and they just all trees are gone, and then in Newfoundland it takes a lifetime to grow another one. So it's the policy implications then?
Excellent comments, and a bit of a challenge there. There's some interesting comments that go along with that. Richard's posting, cities and towns make clearing roads a huge priority, and we should be making clearing sidewalks more of a priority. City of Toronto is awful as it leaves sidewalks to homeowners. Some are more conscientious than others. And Lloyd posted, Megan, one of our residents at 66 years old, was out jogging on Saturday and Sunday. Impressive for him and for you. Karen writes, our soccer field, I think it's field, is partially cleared, and the Zamboni from the nearby arena maintains a skating surface for outdoor free skating. Hills are made from the snow from the cleared streets for sliding for the kids. So there's opportunities there, I think, linking different kinds of groups together. I've got time for a few more questions. Here's a very interesting one. How does successful aging become central and not just an aside? When did successful aging come into play? How does successful aging become central to the planning and the involvement there and not just an aside?
This is Megan from Regina. Just because that was our presentation that we had discussed, just mentioned age-friendly communities. Not exactly sure when it came into play, but it's essentially that designing of the communities. I think that 880 Cities really has put it well, where you design a city for somebody who's 8 years old and 80 years old, and then you've got a complete community. So really not referring necessarily to the age-friendly communities, but more of a complete community. Once you start referring to a certain demographic, then you cut off the rest of the demographics and they might not listen quite as well. But really ensuring that you've got that complete community and then it's safe and accessible for all ages and populations. As it pertains specifically to age-friendly communities, now, if you do create a community that is safer for your older population or people with mobility issues, then you do create a safer community, generally speaking, for the rest of your population. And I know that age-friendly communities is a term and it is a project throughout the country. So
at some point in your work, did the social determinants of health come into play as you all came to define health more broadly?
This is Faye. Well, speaking with a public health background, from our perspective, they're always in play. And one of our intents within this whole project was to be inclusive and to consider those determinants that actually are impacted by healthy built environment.
Yeah, I would say here in New Brunswick, it's the same thing. It's intrinsic in everything that we do in public health, and it's us more about trying to get the message across that health is a lot bigger than death, disability, and disease. Thank you. Yeah, death, disability, and disease, and trying to bring in that social determinant of health picture into that conversation with our other, frankly, our built environment stakeholders who may not necessarily see themselves as playing a role in health.
And it's Joy from Regina, and I echo the exact same response. It's basically built into, you know, every presentation, every conversation that we do about that health inequity component, and we, you know, talk more specifically, too, about our vulnerable populations of our children, of our seniors or people with mobility issues that possibly don't have a vehicle when we're looking at community design and complete communities and community hubs and services and those kinds of things. So, it's always built in.
What indicators have you found to measure the built environment at the community level? Increased usage or health impacts or something like that? Have you done any, are there indicators that you've been using in measuring your work?
This is Mary here in St. John's. Not directly in the kinds of projects that we've been doing, because we haven't really had that need to, but we did have a committee set up to identify some of the kinds of sort of common and easily usable indicators that planners or communities could use to measure those kinds of things. And I don't have those here in front of me, but I could certainly make those available to whoever is asking the question.
Great. Thanks very much. Well, we can ask our presenters, if they had one last thought they'd like to leave with our participants, what would that be?
This is Holly from New Brunswick, and I guess just that for us here in New Brunswick, we very much see this work that's happened in the last year as kind of the first start of many more projects and work to come. We're at early stages, but there's definitely growing momentum here in New Brunswick, and I think that if anyone's interested in chatting with us a bit more about the work that we've been doing or have some great ideas they want to share with us about how to go forward, then we definitely would welcome your emails and calls. Please get in touch with us anytime. And I don't know if you want to add anything.
Perfect. No, that's perfect.
Okay.
Well, this is Mary. I think my biggest takeaway from the work we've been doing is how, especially with rural communities, is how important it is to actually get out into them and walk around in them with people that live there and help them try and see their community through a different set of eyes or different lens. I think that's really what's going to ultimately move a lot of this stuff forward. Just show people what the possibilities are.
Great, thanks.
And this is Megan here. We just wanted to kind of reiterate that the conversation really doesn't end here. If you have any questions, want further clarification, don't hesitate to contact us. We really think that Holly, Kevin, Mary, Faye, and Joy, and Lloyd is also on the line, which shows the capacity and that commitment to this initiative, have really brought together a lot of the thoughts that we have and a lot of the experiences that we have. So we want to also thank our partners nationally as well.
Great, which leaves me the opportunity. Lloyd, do you have something to share about something that was provided success factors or some barriers in your work there with your group?
Yeah, I just wanted to say as a community, it was really what drove us forward was having the actual facilitation from Regina Capel Health Region. So I think that's really a strong component is them being involved fully.
And it's Joy here, and I just wanted to echo that the CLASP project has really truly helped us rebuild our relationship with our rural communities.
I just want to thank our funder, Canadian Partnership Against Cancer, for having the vision to actually fund this kind of work, this kind of relationship building and policy development. I think it's really important. I think that the groups are doing is really terrific, but it requires that commitment to support kind of preventive work at a built environment level.